We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from Wild Turkey Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey. Let's tune in to their one-on-one with Jamal, a real bartender from Old Fourth Ward in Atlanta.
I really get into the backstory of whatever I'm pouring. Out of respect, there are literally years of experience behind these bottles. Wild Turkey, same recipe since 1942. If you want a true classic, this is what you want to order.
Wild Turkey. Wild Turkey Distilling Company, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. Copyright 2020, Campari American, New York, New York. Never compromise, drink responsibly.
Yeah, I just went out there and did what Swaggy P do. Teammates played great, and we came out with the victory, you know?
I'm just trying to really get my NBA 2K rating up.
You know, it's 12:02 right now. If they want to fire me at 12:05, I'll go home and find something to do. I'll have a good day.
Not big easy. We go to game seven, baby. Game seven.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast presented by FanDuel. I'm Nick Whalen here with James Anderson. James, last time you were on this podcast, I don't think we were sponsored by FanDuel, so I can see your face right now. You were understandably caught off guard by the new sponsorship. But you took a couple weeks off from the pod, a sabbatical, I guess it's fair to say.
I think a sabbatical is a little longer than that.
I don't know. Is there like a certain point at which you're gone that it goes from like a break to a sabbatical?
I think like a sabbatical is typically like at least a half a year.
I am Googling the definition of sabbatical. We are 37 seconds into the podcast, and I think this is exactly how we thought this would start. It is a period of paid leave granted to a university teacher or other worker for study or travel, traditionally 1 year for every 7 years served.
RotoWire does not hand out sabbaticals.
Yeah, you're also not a university teacher or other worker. So yeah, definitely not a sabbatical. I think we can rule that out. But either way, you're back. You spent a lot of the last couple of weeks kind of gearing up for baseball. Baseball officially started last night, right?
Yeah, this morning even.
Yeah, I was getting all these emails that were kind of sent to our entire office about MLB lineups, things that I haven't had to think about for a long time. But if you're a baseball guy, definitely read all of James' prospect stuff on the website. I feel like we have more baseball content than ever, I think, this year between what you and Clay have been able to churn out.
Yeah, that might be true. We always have a lot.
It might also not be true.
It's good. check it out if you're a baseball fan. But yeah, I requested to come back on the show. I just miss being on this podcast so much. I'm happy to be back.
Well, that was a nice upsell for our baseball content. Anyway, it is Wednesday, March 20th. Typically, we would record on Thursdays, of course. But I was really glad that, like you said, you hit me up wanting to do this podcast a day early. Which is great because I did not want to take like 2 hours tomorrow away from the NCAA tournament to do this. So being able to do this on March 20th means that we're doing it on the Brock Ness monster, John Brockman, ex-King, ex-Buck, ex-Washington Husky. It's his 32nd birthday today. He was the 38th pick in the 2009 NBA draft, better known as the B.J. Mullins draft. My question to you, James, can you name the five leading scorers from the 2009 NBA draft?
Can I
for more context?
Pull it up.
You can pull it up, but you can't pull up the.
Right. I just need to have the draft in front of me.
This was the Thabit draft.
2009 draft.
So 10 years ago.
This is, riveting.
Yep.
Production. Content.
Correct.
As always. All right. So Blake Griffin. How many did you want?
Five. He's number four. Talking total points.
Yep. James Harden, Steph Curry.
Yep, 1, 2.
DeMar DeRozan.
3.
So just got to get number 5.
It's not Brandon Jennings.
Make sure I'm not. Well, okay. You just eliminated.
Free space.
A guy I probably wasn't going to guess, but.
Okay. It's also not B.J. Mullins.
Right. I just want to make sure I'm not missing anyone further down the draft. Is it Chase Budinger? No, it's not Chase Budinger.
I'll put the laugh track in there for that one.
I guess by process of elimination, I am going to say it is Drew Holiday.
Correct. Right. 5 for 5. Well done. All five of those players have top 10,000 career points. No one else has reached that milestone. But next season, Tyreek Evans will likely join them, assuming he doesn't fall off the face of the earth. Anyway, NCAA tournament, you and I are not really qualified, I don't think. I don't want to speak for you, but me personally, to offer like NCAA tournament picks or anything like that.
We're just as qualified as a lot of people that are doing it. But
a lot of people on TV, at least, yes. But we can talk about it from an NBA draft perspective. We'll get to some more NBA stuff later on. But I did want to ask you right away. I don't think we actually did this year, but typically at the beginning of the college season, we would choose our my guys, just guys, whether they're actually good players, whether they're NBA prospects or not, just guys that you really like. And since we never did that, now that the tournament kind of gives us an opportunity, who are some of your guys for the 2019 NCAA tournament?
Kobe White, UNC, go Heels. The problem is, I feel like my guys, just my knowledge of the player pool is it gets a little smaller every year, and so my guys keep getting better every year because I don't know those fringe guys.
Right. That actually is a good point.
Nevertheless, I like both the Tennessee guys.
Okay.
I like pretty much all the Gonzaga guys.
Okay, so now we're just doing entire rosters.
Yeah, there are definitely.
I really like Zion Williamson at Duke, the Williamson kid.
I like Ja Morant. I don't know. Terrence Mann's a bad enough, typically my guy type of caliber of player. Kobe White, I think, or at least I hope we'll talk about him a little bit later. But
of course.
I don't know who. Let me turn the question back around on you. I'm sure you have.
Whoa, I wasn't prepared for this.
I'm sure you have at least four or five solid answers to this.
The point that you made that, not following college basketball closely enough to know the eighth man on Wichita State who would typically be, one of those guys, a Marcus McDuffie, so to speak, rings true for me as well. So, Kobe White, I do think, though, Kobe White, putting myself in seventh grade me's shoes when I was really into college basketball, he would have made the list either way.
Right.
So I don't feel bad about that one. Admiral Schofield for sure. Yep. I'm not a Grant Williams guy. Reminds me too much of Sean May. Mm-hmm. He's just a little too burly.
Well, I like a burly college player, but sure. Admiral Schofield for sure. He would have been young me would have loved Admiral Schofield as much as old me.
Brazdeikis at Michigan.
Yep.
I like Jordan Murphy at Minnesota, as much as it pains me to say that. Eighth year senior. One of the all-time rebounders in Big Ten history.
That's high praise.
A great solid.
Been a lot of good rebounders over the years in the Big Ten.
And then the other guy that comes to mind is Naz Reid. Everything about him screams fifth year senior. But he's actually 18 and was a big time, prep prospect. We'll maybe get into him a little bit when we talk about NBA. Putting together a really nice year for LSU, not exactly the type of guy you look at as a potential first round pick. But we'll get into that in a little bit. Who are your like all-time my guys? I think you have like a few more years before I really got into college basketball. Like you've named names before that I have only like vaguely heard of.
Well, I mean, there's probably over 10 Arizona players who would be my guys. Some guys like some UNC guys like Joe Forte. Yeah. You know, I liked those UConn teams like way back in the day. Like, you know, once it became like the Emeka Okafor UConn program, like I was kind of a little out on that team. But like the Khalid El-Amin, Rip Hamilton teams, I love those teams. Man, like Lonnie Baxter, like the fat, like I love fat, like 6'9" centers that can put a college basketball team on their back. And I love fat, like 5'10" point guards that can put a college team on their back. So both ends of that spectrum.
Yeah. I mean, LaVance Fields, I think certainly fits that. He was kind of one of my all timers. Anybody who wore a t-shirt under the jersey that they clearly cut themselves, you know, you can't buy a t-shirt that was cut like the one that LaVance Fields had, like kind of went over the shoulder, you know, not really a cutoff, not really a t-shirt. That was kind of the hallmark of any fat point guard. Saleem Stoudemire, I mean, he's been talked about on this podcast before. I mean, the free space of all free spaces. AC Law, D Brown, Rashad McCants.
I'm not a D Brown guy.
What?
No. I hate everyone from that Illinois team.
Okay, why?
Because that was like my least favorite.
A Luther Head guy.
That was my least favorite. That comeback win that Illinois team had against Arizona was like my least favorite college hoops game of all time. Slightly ahead of the Aaron Gordon Wisconsin game from a few years back.
Back-to-back games, those Wisconsin-Arizona Elite Eight games.
Yeah, don't get me started.
I also had Jason Maxiel and Hakeem Warrick on my list. The running theme really is no success at the pro level whatsoever. You know,
yes.
Jason Maxiel, of all those guys, is probably the best NBA player of the seven I named. You hinted at are you more tied to Arizona or Minnesota when it comes to the tournament?
Arizona.
Okay, sure.
I don't even know of any Minnesota tournament runs that would have me tied. I mean, that would be a fair question if you said, are you more Arizona or Minnesota when it comes to college basketball?
Yeah.
But when you say when it comes to the tournament, it's like, well,
sure.
I mean.
Yeah, well.
I like teams that win games in the tournament.
I was a little surprised to see you in the office today. I kind of figured you'd be in Des Moines with the Gophers getting ready for tomorrow.
Yeah,
Badgers are out
driving down
Jose.
After the show. So,
I guess that's not really a flyable destination. But on a slightly more serious note, you did a college basketball NCAA tournament player draft, which I believe somewhat aired live on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
Riveting radio, I'm sure. Yeah. But you've done this the last few years. I think I did it 2 or 3 years ago. Haven't been invited back for unknown reasons. But how did that go? You can kind of run through
your
roster. You can kind of maybe give some of the top picks. And you know, I think for the most part, it'll kind of make sense.
You know, actually, a guy who would have been a my guy would have been Cassius Winston, probably.
I know that
you're not about that at all.
Not fat.
I like his game, like as just kind of a college only type of game.
Yeah, right. It definitely screams not playing in the NBA.
Right. Unless for whatever reason the Spurs see something they like and all of a sudden he turns into their seventh man. But I took Rui Hachimura with my first pick, which was the fourth overall pick.
Okay.
He went behind Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, and Grant Williams. I then took Coby White in the second round. I took Carson Edwards, go Boilermakers, in the third round. Just really kind of going for quality over quantity in terms of games with Edwards there.
We should say, I mean, there is the element of, you know, when that player's team is out, you obviously lose them for the tournament.
Right.
So you do have to take team success into account. Where did Morant go?
I took him in the fourth round,
okay.
Which would have been like pick. I don't know, like pick 30, pick 32, something like that. And that's, you know, I think the Murray State could feasibly make a Sweet 16. I think Purdue could feasibly make an Elite Eight. So, like, there's a little bit of upside, but at least I know the games they do play. I should be getting a ton of stuff. Then I took, then I kind of started trending towards NBA players. I took Ethan Happ in the fifth round.
That was really uncalled for.
I took Davison. I did take Naz Reid in the sixth round. I took some guys that I don't know anything about from teams that I have going far, in
such as
Jared Harper, Auburn.
Of course.
Mariel Shayok, Iowa State. You could tell me anything about those two guys and I'd believe you. Talon Horton Tucker from Iowa State. And
is that three people?
Nojel Eastern from Purdue. So the last four guys, I literally know nothing other than that they play for certain schools that I have going far. And that's all I can tell you.
It was very clear by the way those names were pronounced, I think. That it was a little unsure as to what's all about those guys. Yeah, well, that'll be really interesting. I wrote up an article for the site yesterday. It's still up, believe it or not. You can read it on rotowire.com. Just kind of breaking down. It's called Your Guide to the Top Prospects, Top NBA Prospects in the NCAA Tournament. Went a little bit beyond that. Basically covered, you know, most guys who could get drafted in the first round, and then named a few who might be second rounders. But I know you read that probably four or five times, you know, end to end today.
You went a little too deep for my liking.
I have a tendency to do that. There are just certain guys I'm like, well, if I write up Taco Fall, then I got to write up Naz Reid. And if I write up Naz Reid, then I got to, I got to write up other guys in that range. But it came in at under 3,000 words. I was fine with that.
Yeah, but if you'd written about like 20 fewer guys, you could have included YouTube highlight reels for all of the guys.
You're going to watch all those?
I mean, I'd love
to. I guess this might be your introduction to some
I would have loved to have had a YouTube video of Nikhil Alexander-Walker that I could have
put it in. I didn't want to overwhelm people with videos.
Okay. All right. You somehow included a Bruno Fernando video, which, like, who cares?
Who cares? NBA teams care. Well, was there anyone who jumped out to you that you wanted to talk about? I mean, we can hit on Zion and Barrett. Everyone seems to know about that.
I kind of really like the West region, just kind of the guys up top. Like, I think Ja Morant and Jarrett Culver being in there is great. You know, I mean, those guys both are going to go really high. And then I think the two guys from Gonzaga both could. They kind of fit the mold of guys that could help themselves in the tournament. I do have one guy that I think is going to help himself the most in this tournament from a draft perspective. Do you have a guy that kind of stands out to you, like kind of like the way like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander did, right, sort of down the stretch last year?
I mean, I wrote down a few guys. I think Kobe White's probably the most obvious.
Yep.
And he's kind of played his way. He's already done that throughout the season, but I think, you know, as we've seen year after year, like Shai was a really good example. You can make up more ground in a matter of like two or three tournament games than you can in 20 regular season games. And I think Kobe White is the type of guy who, if North Carolina makes it to the Elite Eight, if they make it to the Final Four, could go from, you know, what a month ago we were looking at him in like the 18 to 25 range. He could kind of creep his way into the late lottery, kind of right where Gilgeous-Alexander ended up going. Like, I don't know if there's anything that he could feasibly do in this tournament outside of averaging, you know, 30 and 10 a game to work his way really into that, like, top seven or eight.
It's just kind of, like, solidifying that,
right,
like, you're going to be invited to the green room, you're going in the lottery, that type of thing.
Well, and he was someone, too, that even 2 months ago, maybe probably closer to 3 months ago, we didn't even know if he'd be a one and done. I mean, coming into North Carolina, I think
probably didn't think he would be.
I don't think they wanted him to be.
Right. No.
I mean, they certainly didn't want him to be, but he was too good to keep off the floor. I mean, he's kind of been the opposite story of Naz Little, where, you know, Little, I think, finished second or third ranked in the class, and Kobe White was 25th, according to 24/7. And, I mean, we'll talk about Little in a little bit. He's someone I had on my list who could improve his stock. You know, I think teams want to believe in him so badly, and you often see, like, a guy with his pedigree can only fall so far. You know, like, he's objectively been a major disappointment in basically all phases of the game, other than, you know, looking like a five-star athlete. You know, he's had a ton of, like, really impressive rebounds and put back dunks and things like that, but he hasn't really done the other little things that you'd expect from a top prospect. But he's the type of guy that, if for whatever reason, after 30 plus games, figures it out and puts up 25 in a, you know, a big Elite Eight win, you know, all of a sudden he's a guy who might be in the conversation again in the top 5 to 7. Whereas it looks like now he's looking at probably mid to late lottery.
So, do you think There's really no arguing with the fact that guys, like you said, can really help themselves in the tournament, at least just based on recent track record of how the draft is shaken out and where draft boards are supposedly at right now. But do you think the tournament play should have that? Or you should be capable of, like, I mean, should the tournament count as much as like 10 games in January counted? Or
I don't think so. It's kind of inevitable, right?
Right.
Like, I think if you're a scout or a GM, you're probably telling yourself, don't weigh one game more than a 30 game sample that we have of this guy. But you see over and over, like, I think in theory, to me, it's easier when you hear about picks being influenced by an owner or someone who's not a scout, who's not watching every game. They're probably only tuning in for maybe 3 or 4 regular season games. But if a guy has an incredible 4-game run, you know, that might become, you know, a faction of the organization's guy. And they're basing it only off of that run. They're maybe willing to ignore some of the shortcomings earlier in the year. I think it's just inevitable, you know. And you have to kind of compare it, I think, to like the pre-one-and-done era where you're drafting guys based on absolutely nothing but high school tape. You're looking at Travis Outlaw dunking on a bunch of 6'2 guys in Mississippi and just saying, let's take that guy. Like, you know, it's not a perfect system, but I think to me, at least you're going off of some sort of higher level of competition, and I think that's what the tournament is.
Well, and I think there are, you know, just specifically with Gonzaga, and maybe to like a lesser degree with Ja Morant, like you're getting, like you actually maybe should weigh this more than what, like, just based on the quality of competition, yes. Right? With Rui, you know, the Duke game and then whatever he does in the tournament are going to be the most watched games of tape on him by, like, people in front offices because, like, he should be able to dominate in the WCC. Like, but, you know, Rui, if he were to, or even Brandon Clark, like, if both these guys just look awesome and Gonzaga wins the title and they once again really hold their own against Duke, then I think that really solidifies them as lottery picks. And with Morant, like, I mean, I don't really know what he could do to fall out of the top three, but he could maybe firmly entrench himself as the favorite to go two with a really impressive Sweet 16 run.
Yeah, I think any mid-major guy, you really don't have much ground to lose. Gonzaga is almost kind of a different situation just because even though they are mid-major in conference, you know, I don't think they're really thought of that way. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I guess you could make the case for Morant where if he goes out against Marquette and, you know, puts up 30 points, but he's 11 of 33 from the field and has 8 turnovers and is, you know, kind of out of control, trying to do too much, there will be people that say, well, this is what would happen all the time if he played against this competition. So it's risk reward, but ultimately the sample I think is too small to draw any major conclusions. How badly do you want Murray State to beat Marquette? I feel like everyone who's not a Marquette fan is rooting for Murray State, right?
This tournament like becomes exponentially more fun with each game that Murray State wins.
Yes.
To me, like as someone who just comes at this, like I'll fill out a bracket, just whatever to have some reason to care about who wins these games, but I like mostly just want to see the pro prospects and putting the potential number 2 overall pick on a 12 seed and having them go on a run is really just the dream scenario if you're just looking at this from an NBA standpoint.
I mean, I wrote in that article like this, he's the most exciting and most well-known mid-major player since Steph Curry, right? I couldn't really think of anyone. I didn't like comb through every roster, is not all that close, right? And I guess if you want to count like some players from Memphis, you know, when they were technically a mid-major, but like in terms of like true small school players.
Right, yeah, I think that's got to be right. I mean, I don't know who else it could have been.
Yeah, and you think back, 2008, that run that Davidson had, you know, beating, I think they beat Gonzaga and then Georgetown and then, of course, Wisconsin.
Were they a 10 seed?
I'm trying to look that up as we speak.
I think I'm remembering that right.
They were 27-6 that year. They were a 10. Yeah. So they beat 7 seed Gonzaga, and then ended up losing to Kansas, in the Elite Eight. But like, that's the type of run.
Right. And that's the type of run where you know, maybe it's easier for a prospect like Steph Curry to carry a team with his shooting than it is for – but, like, I mean, he – okay, so if you were just saying let's rank all the players in this tournament just based on their potential to, like, carry a team on their back, I mean, he might be number one.
In the NBA or no, just
like,
in this tournament?
Just, like, in this tournament
yeah.
to carry
I mean, partially out of necessity team. For him, but yeah.
Right, like, he – I don't think any game that Murray State wins in this tournament should be considered like a shocking surprise because he's just that good. Right. And that, like, there's going to be teams obviously game planning to try to stop him. But, you know, I think he's a pretty willing passer. Like, if I were his advisor slash agent, I would just say, like, the best thing you can do for your NBA stock is to make the right play yes. as much as possible and not try to force it. Like, obviously take over when you can take over, but if they are, you know, doubling you, like, find your teammates, and like NBA scouts will like that more than if you just try to play hero ball. Mm-hmm. And as long as he does that and he's like drawing all the defense to him, I think that they could go pretty far.
Yeah, I think this is the biggest chance for him to like to legitimize himself for the casual fan, if that makes sense. Like, and there are probably still skeptics out there.
We need to have at least one, you know, even if they lost to Marquette, which would just be a doomsday scenario, we need to at least have one, like, he put someone on a poster yes. type of highlight plays that we can see on TVs at the bar for the rest of the weekend.
Right. Exactly. And I think we'll get something. Like, he's going to go down, you know, I was talking to the guys out there earlier. Like, one, I said, if I'm really glad that, you know, Wisconsin and Marquette are both fives. I'm really glad that Marquette got Murray State, because if Wisconsin got that matchup, I would legitimately be rooting for Murray State. I really think I would. Right. This Wisconsin team's not going to the Final Four, so I would just kind of have to switch over. But luckily, I can root against Marquette and root for Murray State. No conflict of interest. But he's going to go down swinging no matter what. Like, I cannot imagine a scenario in which Marquette wins this game and Ja Morant takes fewer than like 25 shots.
Yeah, and
I could all, like I said earlier, I could imagine a scenario where Marquette wins and he kind of shoots them out of it in some ways. Or
how many attempted dunks in traffic will he average per game?
Three.
Yeah, I think so.
Three. Yeah.
That's what we need to have happen. Yeah. I just need at least like one per half where it's a high degree difficulty in traffic and he tries to throw it down anyway.
I think they can beat Marquette. Marcus Howard's a little banged up. He's had a wrist issue. Marquette had a disastrous close. I mean, they were set up for what looked like, you know, a few weeks ago, maybe a two and then probably a three. And then they were almost locked into a four and then lost two more games at the end of their conference season and ended up with a five. The only thing is they probably would get whoever the winner of that game is probably getting four seed Florida State in the next round with your guy, Terrence Mann. I think Murray State would have a lot of trouble because Florida State is like the longest team in the country. And you hear from, I mean, I think I forget which coach it was. Some mid-major coach said the other day, like, the biggest difference isn't necessarily guard play or shooting, you know, between a good mid-major and a high major. It's just like the amount of size that you have at the center and power forward spots. And Murray State does not have the big men to match up with Florida State.
Yeah, but they would have the best player.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. That would be at least a fun game. Like, maybe I'm just blinded by the fact that I want them to go really far, but yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That is tough that they have to play Florida State.
I think that's tomorrow at 3:45-ish Central. So should be prime time. I think that's like one of the last afternoon games before they switch over to the night slate. All right, let's take a quick break so I can tell you about the presenting sponsor of this podcast, FanDuel.com. The NBA regular season is nearing its end, but that does not mean your fantasy basketball season is coming to a close. FanDuel is offering the most exciting ways to play fantasy basketball no matter what you're looking for. FanDuel is something for everyone, tons of different contests and formats to choose from, starting at just 25 cents to enter. All you have to do is pick a contest, choose your team, and enjoy watching your results in real time. James, I know you and I both play on FanDuel. Really good way to stay engaged with every single NBA game every single night. And I know you'll be back on that when baseball season starts. Myself, probably not so much. Either way, though, play against your friends for bragging rights, or you can play against the public for millions of dollars in cash prizes. To take advantage of our special offer for new FanDuel users, sign up today at FanDuel.com/RW. That's FanDuel.com/RW. That'll get you a free 6-month RotoWire subscription with your first deposit on FanDuel, and you'll have access to everything we offer on RotoWire.com. Every sport, all of our DFS content, all the articles that Clay and James and our other baseball guys have been putting out there with opening day coming up. And you get all that with a FanDuel deposit. Again, all you have to do is just visit FanDuel.com/RW. Offers for new FanDuel users only. Void where prohibited. A couple other guys I had on my list, you know, guys who could kind of either rise or fall based on how they play. Nas Little, who we touched on a little bit. Like I said, I think he's one or two really good games away from being right back in the discussion in the top five or six. You know, if he continues as he's been going, which is probably the more likely scenario, you know, he's probably locked in still in like the late lottery at some point.
Yeah, I think there gets a point where you just say like, whatever, like, well, this guy's just got too much upside and the rest of these guys, you know.
Especially in a draft like this where, you know, we're not looking at, you know, a situation where you have a guy like Dennis Smith who you could get at 8 or 9, you know, like a pretty big time prospect. Like once you get out of the top three, you know, I think teams will be willing to chance it on a guy like Naz Reid before they would on, you know, like when you'd still take him, even though he's been disappointing, over someone like a Jonte Porter, you know, who's an older player and is coming off an injury. Like you start, there are a lot of guys with question marks, I guess, when you get outside of the top three and four.
I want to, so who, if just right now, kind of guessing how the tournament goes, who do you think goes higher in the draft out of Coby White and Naz Little?
I feel like if you were handicapping this, White would be the favorite, or Little would be the favorite, right? By he's kind of the incumbent, but
is it kind of a thing where, like, if Coby White has the type of tournament that you and I sort of hope he has, he probably passes Little, but if he just kind of has like a okay couple games and then like a bad game and a good game, then maybe Little.
I don't even know that. That he has to like be the catalyst for North Carolina, but if they make the Final Four and he's obviously starting every game and playing big minutes and has maybe one really good game in there, like that alone might be enough. But if they fizzle out and get upset in like round two or three, you know, then I think it probably goes back to Little.
Do you buy that Coby White is 6'5", or is that a hair? Is the hair?
He looks closer to 6'4", right?
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna say like 6'3", 6'4". Like I think the hair makes him look tall. Like even with the hair, I'm just like 6'5".
He looks like he's 6'5" with the hair.
Like 6'5" is like pretty tall for a point guard.
Well, think of how big, like Carter Williams. I mean, I hate to bring his name up, although he is back in the NBA now.
I saw that.
Like he's 6'6", so 1 inch difference. But like he looked very tall, especially at Syracuse. Like he was tower. It was very noticeable that he's a big point guard. And like I agree with you. Like I was very surprised to learn, you know, when you're watching the first or second UNC game of the year when they say he's 6'5". Like I think we'll.
Because that really matters for, like, you know, if he's 6'5", and he measures 6'5", at the combine, or, like, a little under 6'5", and he has a good tournament, like, he could go in the top 10.
No, for sure. Tyler Herro is on my list. I mean, not a guy that I ever would have expected to even be talking about as a draft prospect. He's kind of reminds me of this year's DiVincenzo, you know, for somewhat obvious reasons in certain respects. But he can only climb so high. I mean, his ceiling.
Is he that athletic?
He's not that athletic, but he's pretty athletic. I mean, he's struggled on defense. He's a little bit slighter, I think, than DiVincenzo. I mean, he's a true freshman. DiVincenzo obviously had a little bit more seasoning at the college level. But you know, PJ Washington's banged up for Kentucky. Tyler Harrow's had some big games over the last couple of months. Like if he has a 30-plus point game and he hits like 7 threes and Kentucky goes to the Elite Eight, I think he's a guy who could, like right now he's very much on the border, I think, in terms of stay or leave. Like if he stays, he goes into next year as probably a preseason first or second team All-American. If he leaves, you know, he risks, you know, maybe sliding to the second round. What, you don't think he'd come back as an All-American?
I just think it would be pretty poor advice for him to come back. Like, he's already worked his way into this, like,
into the discussion. I don't know if he's locked in. Like,
to the first round. Like,
yeah. But DiVincenzo wasn't locked in until he had that run.
I mean, when you're a guy like Herro and you're kind of a specialist, like a good specialist, but sort of a specialist, and you start getting first round buzz, I think you kind of got to go. Because, like, you know, just 3-point shooting, you know, everyone has a down year when you have. You know, you could shoot a worse percentage next year just based on like bad luck, and all of a sudden people are like, oh well, he's a sophomore that only shot like 38%.
The inverse of draft stock versus like production as you get older is an interesting one. But he, I mean, in fairness to Harrow, he is more, he's not just like Lee Humphreys at Florida, just running and gunning threes. Like, I think he's a 37-ish percent three-point shooter. So he's not like a Kyle Korver. I think it's almost more like mini poor man's Devin Booker. Like, mm-hmm. he can shoot off the dribble. He can get into the lane a little bit. He's not just a specialist.
Do you like DeAndre Hunter as much as some people seem to?
I like him a lot as a defender. I still kind of question what he's going to be offensively. I also think he looks bigger in person. Like, when I would have guessed, like, watching Virginia play, I would be like, oh, that guy's probably, what, 6'9"-ish? And, like, they list him at 6'7". And to me, he's kind of plays more like a power forward. And he's, you know, firmly a wing in terms of size in the NBA. So I do have some questions here. Like, is there an NBA player that he kind of reminds you of? I mean, in terms of body, he's certainly ready and athleticism, but I just really don't know what to expect from him offensively next year.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I mean, so much of it hinges on the defensive value translating when he gets into the NBA. If he's like just a solid wing defender, then I think it's going to be a bad pick. He kind of has to be a, you know, like at least like Jaylen Brown level defender for that to be a good pick in the top 10.
He kind of reminds me of a mix of Jaylen Brown, more of that athleticism, and you're probably gonna hate this, but Nigel Hayes is honestly who you're like watching him. I'm like, his jump shot looks so much like Nigel Hayes' shot, and obviously he's a much more athletic player, but Nigel Hayes was a great college player. I think he's more Jaylen Brown. But yeah, I mean, I've seen him as high as 4 in some mocks, and I think that's, you know, that's fair. I don't know if I would want to take him at 4.
Who do you like more out of him and Jarrett Culver?
I think Culver, like the all-around production, like not many guys can do it. The comp that I wrote for him was Caris LeVert, who we never really got to see in full at college because he was always hurt. But you know, for a guy who's 6'6", 6'7", can get 20 points, can get, you know, 7 or 8 rebounds, 3 or 4 assists, a couple steals. Like I think like that kind of all-around production just seems to translate really well. Like he could be another, probably a slightly better version of like McCall Bridges to me.
Yeah, I think I'd rather bet on Culver's offense than Hunter's defense. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like the guys that sort of come out of nowhere the way that he did, because it just, you know, shows you this guy, A, like put in the work to get better, and you don't know like when is he going to stop getting better. Like, because like Hunter basically just sort of did kind of what everyone expected him to do this year, whereas Culver, like, maybe there's another level still there that he taps into in the NBA.
Yeah, well, and the thing with Hunter too, like, evaluating Virginia guys is just tough. Like, we really don't know what to expect in a real offense, and like you almost have to prorate his averages to like this, you know, a standard system.
You like the Malcolm Brogdon like pre-draft scouting report versus the Malcolm Brogdon now, like what he's good at, what he's bad at. It's just like you would have never been like, oh, this guy's going to be an awesome straight line driver who's just like, okay on defense.
No.
Like,
no, it really is. I mean, it's night and day when those guys get out of that system. I had Trey Jones on my list as well. Don't need to talk too much about him. I mean, it really is shocking. I compared him and Tyus Jones. And,
you know, I'm a Tyus Jones stan.
Yeah. Well, so are you a Trey Jones stan? I mean, like the similarities in terms of output are kind of crazy.
I think you know, part of what won me over with Tyus was just his the way that he stepped up in that tournament run. And I
have no memory of that.
if Trey does something similar where, you know, clearly not one of the two best players on his team or two best. Well, I guess maybe he was in college. Tyus might have been as good or better than Justice Winslow. But just in terms of like pro prospects, clearly the third, distant third in terms of pro prospects, but he like carried that team.
Right.
I don't envision Trey Jones doing that because I don't think there'll be a need for him to do that with those other guys being so ball dominant. But, you know, he could have some just really impressive defensive plays that spark things for them and maybe win them a game that they really need. And that could vault him. It wouldn't be surprising at all if Trey Jones gets into like that mid-teens range with a good tournament.
I mean, he's still, most mocks you'll see him in the mid-20s, mid to late 20s, which I didn't realize this. He's only shooting like 24% from three. So that's the big difference. Like Tyus was close to 40% and obviously got a lot of good looks. But, you know.
He kind of reminds me a little bit of like a Corey Joseph.
Sure.
You kind of hope that he's a really, really solid backup point guard.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think if he has the career that Tyus Jones has had so far, that's probably fine. I mean, are you a little disappointed?
I just think Tyus Jones has gotten super jobbed by his situation. Like, I think that he's been deserving of – I mean, the whole Thibodeau thing was just a mess for him. And I think he's a capable, like, low-end starter in the NBA and just has never really been given that
shot.
The
fact that he has never been the starting point guard for the Orlando Magic makes no sense. He should be in his second year as the full-time starter in Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, I would think they could have gotten him back when a certain guy was pulling the strings for the team.
I mean, they go even when Rose and Teague are hurt, like they go out of their way to only play Tyus Jones like 18 minutes.
How many games does Cam Reddish have to have where he averages where he like puts up like 6-2-0 you to like worry about him as a top five pick?
I was just gonna say we want to hurry up a little bit here, but I did want to talk about Reddish like. I mean, you won't see him listed lower than 5 or 6. He has been objectively, like, really, really bad for about 75% to 80% of Duke season. For a guy who coming in was billed as a mix of like Paul George and Tracy McGrady, but he can shoot the lights out. He's shooting like 33% from three or from the field. He's like 30% from beyond the arc. Like that's the biggest concern for me is not that. You know, he gets lost in the shuffle. Like I think it's really hard to play with RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson and be the third guy.
His style of play offensively is kind of my style of play at like pickup hoops, where I just kind of I just kind of roam around the 3-point line. Like if I get an open look, I'll shoot it. Happy to just pass it and like stay out of everyone's way. You know, and, like that's his style of play on offense. It's really
in fairness to him, he gets kind of pigeonholed into some bad shots, like end of shot clock. Mm-hmm. Like he's kind of seems to always be the guy who's launching up a pull up three, but he also, I think those are the shots that he wants. You know, he kind of has like a little J.R. Smith to
him.
It's
sort
of
weird to me that he's kind of seen as this top five pick and everyone's like worried as, you know, about Naz Little. Like they kind of both have been similarly busty, but just, I don't know. Like,
I don't know if we can say busty on this podcast. No, those were the two I compared in that article. Was they've both been really disappointing, but for drastically different reasons. Like Naz Little has not started a game, and he's been unable to really break into the rotation. You know, for more than 15 minutes a game. Cam Reddish is averaging like 34 minutes a game, and he's just not been good. Like, which is worse? You know, not being able to get in the rotation and prove that you're bad, or playing so many minutes that you're always on the court. You're always on. You know, you're. Scouts get to see you alongside all these other great Duke players, but you're not playing that well. And for some reason, it seems to have affected Little more than it's affected Reddish.
Do you think, how would you compare their motors? Like, because
Little's motor is much better, right?
Right. Like, I think that, but how would you compare their, like, basketball IQs? You'd probably give, like, comparable. Reddish the red.
I really haven't seen much from Reddish that I've loved, but I also. Like, the jury's kind of still out. I think he's just in a weird situation he's kind of like the Kevin Love or Chris Bosh of this Duke team. And
these guys, so like, compare what like freshman Josh Jackson did. Like, he was very productive.
Don't you dare put that on him.
He was very, very productive for a really good team. Like, he was like a number one option at times I think they were a one seed that year. But like, then he just completely busts. And then these guys are just like, similar, like athletic, like you can dream on that like potential on the wing, and they're not even close to as productive as Josh Jackson was. And I don't know. I think that there's just so many red flags with those guys that maybe they pan out, maybe they help themselves in the tournament, but you could totally see Duke winning the title and Reddish scoring fewer than 10 points in every single game of that run.
Or you could see him having those games all the way there and then scoring like 28 in the title game and being the number 3 overall pick.
Well, I'm hoping one cool way that this could end is like Naz Little does a sort of DiVincenzo in the title game.
That would be awesome.
And like comes off the bench. It would be a Grayson Allen in the title game where he just like saves the day and like everyone else is kind of fumbling it away.
Again, I don't remember that at all. But it would actually be great if Roy Williams was just saving him for the tournament and had just
secret
been beating him down all season to just kind
of
sick him on the NCAA field. The FanDuel Sportsbook, FanDuel, of course, the presenting sponsor of the RotoWire podcast, has Zion Williamson at -1650 to be the number one pick. That's an overwhelming number. I think you have to bet, if you bet like $100, that nets you something like $6. So not a lot of money to be made there. Morant and Barrett are both at 650. Reddish is at 1400. Darius Garland has the fifth highest odds to go number one at 1,700. Not someone we'll be seeing in the tournament. He got hurt after, what, like seven games, I think, at Vanderbilt.
Is there any reason, though, not to make that Zion bet?
It's just a dumb bet because...
Well, it's a. I'm surprised it's on the board at all. Like, right. What the heck would have to happen? Like, it would have to be something like legal, like off the court, like,
or he has like a catastrophic Kevin Ware injury.
But I think he could have torn his ACL on that play where his shoe broke and still got number one overall.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, it would have to be the catastrophic of all catastrophic injuries.
Yeah, like a car crash, right? And he gets like paralyzed. Like, yeah, I mean,
exactly.
Like,
that's why you don't make the bet, because there's not enough. You never know, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
But yeah, I mean, we kind of, I guess, I had thought that this would end up being maybe more of a race between him and Barrett for the number one pick.
Absolutely.
Like, well, I always, you know, every year it looks like it's Okafor and then Towns comes charging in the second half. It looks like it's Ben Simmons 100%, no doubt, and then Brandon Ingram at least made it a conversation. Like, you know, RJ Barrett's a first team All American. He's, you know, ACC leading scorer. He's, you know, one of the best all around players we've seen in recent memory, and it's still a distant two, and he might not even go number two.
Yeah, and I honestly think it's on both of those guys. Like, yeah. I think obviously a ton of it has to do with just how amazing Zion's been, but I think RJ Barrett, he's been really, really productive as a scorer, but I think for him to have kept pace with Zion, he would have had to really impress people with his vision and playmaking ability, and he just kind of never really did that. Like,
which is weird because the assist numbers are good, but yeah, I agree with you that he doesn't.
You want to draft him like and just have him be this guy that isn't going to be always looking for his own shot necessarily, and he just really hasn't shown that that's something he's going to thrive at in the NBA, which is fine. Like, I would still say RJ Barrett probably makes at least one all-star team in the NBA. I just don't think he's shown that sort of, like, you would have to envision him as like a kind of almost a true point guard. Yeah. I think for him to have kept pace with Zion.
Do you think he's more, and I don't even know if this is fair to him, like more Zach LaVine than James Harden then at the next level, where it's like the talent is undeniable. He can give you a 45-10-5 game, but you know, when Harden does it, it's more impactful than when LaVine does it for obvious reasons if you're watching the game.
Yeah, I think it's so tough with Barrett because it can't be understated just how rare it is for a freshman to be this type of dominant scorer in the ACC.
And yeah, it does feel like a really disappointing.
It's kind of, you know, you wish he was a little bit better shooter, a little bit better passer, a little bit like more willing defender. Like, there's just all these little parts of his games that you wish were better.
Yeah, the shooting has improved, which is nice. But yeah, it weirdly feels like he's been dominant, but still slightly disappointing in certain ways. I've said this before. This does remind me of the 2016 draft, the Simmons-Ingram draft, where you had a top two and then a very clear drop. Although I think this year it's probably, you know, a clear one, a small-ish drop from one to two and three, and then a bigger drop from three to, you know, four through 10. But I think it could also end up looking similar in hindsight, where you look at that 2016 draft, and if you sort it by value over replacement, you know, the top 10 by where they were drafted, the top 10 in VORP are 1, 27, 9, 36, 6, 11, 7, 29, 20, and 12. So obviously you have Simmons at 1, but then, you know, you might get the second best player in that draft in the 20s. Although I will say I can't imagine that one of Morant and Barrett, if not both, are kind of perennial all-stars in the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I think that obviously there's a lot of horrible situations in the NBA right now that you wouldn't want to have either of those guys end up in. But yeah, I think whichever guy does not go to the Cavs will have a pretty good career.
All right, last thing. Current MVP order, Giannis is now the favorite in the FanDuel Sportsbook. He's at minus 210, Harden plus 140, PG plus 950. Are you soundly in favor of Giannis at this point?
Yeah. I mean, like, I think he's got it locked up. Like, I think that betting on Giannis right now is a really good bet because just the narrative is just so strong for him. Yeah. I do think he's getting a little too much credit for this swing from last year to this year in terms of the success. Like, I think that he's been a little bit better than he was last year, but not a ton better. Whereas people are underrating the season Brooke Lopez is having. People are, I mean,
Ersan, yeah.
Budenholzer is going to win Coach of the Year, so people aren't really underrating him. But I think that just that was a big part of the gap in the wins. So I think he's deserving, maybe not as deserving as some people think he is.
Yeah. Well, I think Houston's been better, so the gap between their, you know, Houston's wins and the Bucks wins won't be as big as I maybe thought. But since Harden's 30-plus point streak ended, his per-game averages have still been good, right around 33 a game, but 40% from the field, 27% from three. So like I said back then, I think he needed to keep up that pace or at least be close to kind of surmount Giannis. And, you know, I don't really see him over these last 10 games or whatever doing anything to change that. All right, you have Stake Baseball Draft tonight.
Yes,
is that right?
That's one of my favorite nights of the year. It's going to be a good time.
All right, well, enjoy it. Go Gophers. Go Murray State.
Go
Badgers. We'll be back next week.